This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
My popular demand mini part 2 is upon us imminently as the man makes his way into the building. Very exciting. But first, Celtic. And the glorious headline of Duran Duran, which is carried in many back pages this morning, including the Irish Daily Mail here. Celtic 3, Lask nil in their Champions League playoff. Lask, funny enough, scored one of the great disallowed goals in the first minute of this game.
Ah, cracker.
I hadn't seen the start of this game and my live score had 3 notifications within the first minute. Celtic Lask has started. Lask have scored. Yeah. Disallowed Lask. Beautiful strike.
It was, yeah.
But luckily it was just a starter to the actual legitimate beautiful strikes that were scored by Celtic in this game. Take your pick.
3 of the best goals you'll likely to see. People delighted for me in the comments, as you can see, starting away. I struggle to remember 3 better goals scored in this stage of the competition by a side. And 2 quality players scored them. Duran, new signing coming in from Carabag, looks like a real, real bargain. At, I think it was 6 million or something along those lines.
5.5 million.
Benjamin Negrin, top scorer last year, player of the year last year. Bit of a passenger for large swaths of the year as well. Like he scored a ton of goals, but he was not, on the face of it, a very good player. 1.5 million he cost Celtic. But yeah, Celtic have finally put themselves in the driving seat at this stage. They usually famously struggle in the Champions League qualifiers because they're only at the start of the season. They usually don't have their signings made yet. But thankfully, the Celtic board have been quick on the action this year, getting in Casper Hu, getting in Camilo Duran. Mika Boer made his first start at Celtic Park last night in midfield. He, on the face of it, looks like he's going to be Arne Engels' replacement because he comes in midfield. But I've never seen a player look more like Rio Hatate in my life. He has the exact same stature, exact same running gait, exact same passing style. It's really, really bizarre to see that this player who, you know, he was playing for Paderborn, almost identical to Rio Hatate, who's been playing in Celtic midfield for the last couple of years. So, yeah, if Celtic add a couple of more names, they could have a really exciting season ahead. And Martin O'Neill back on the touchline. Good to see. He's flying it.
What do you think they need to add?
They need another centre midfielder. I think it was very obvious in the first, like, 15 minutes that Celtic struggle with gaps in the midfield and pace. So they need a more physical specimen, let's say. Arne Engels was probably the most physical, and he's not that strong or that quick. So they definitely need a bolster in midfield, I would say, and then potentially another goalkeeper. I know they were looking at a goalkeeper in the Championship. Struggling to remember his name, but yeah, they have a couple more signings to make.
They were linked with Gavin Mazunu yesterday.
Yes, I'm not sure it's the right move for either parties if Gavin Mazunu were to go to Celtic, but I think they probably need another left back as well. They had obviously Alistair Johnson was linked with Everton. He hasn't gone because he got injured, but the depth between Alistair Johnson and then you have Anthony Ralston, who came off the bench last night, you know, and then Colby Donovan, who started the game. There's a large gap between the quality of the starter and Alistair Johnson and the rest. So maybe another right back, another centre midfielder, and potentially another winger would be nice. But you're not asking for much.
No.
With that. I think what's important to mention with the Celtic story, though, is that like they've bought quality this year. Like they spent the money on Casper Hur, they spent the money on Camilo Duran. Like previously they would have spent, you know, 1.5 million, as I said, on Benjamin Negrim, who works out. But 1.5 million transfers don't always work out. And to progress in the Champions League, it's an automatic 18 million for the club. So you think if they're building a team for Europe, they are building a team that is, it's going to automatically dominate Scotland anyway. They already dominate Scotland. So imagine what they did, if what they would do if they actually spent some money to prepare for Europe. So look, we're not going to complain off the back of a 3-0 win.
No, of course not. No.
Roy Larmour has been in touch. Blackburn Rovers supporters says their goalkeeper, their Hungarian stopper, Balázs Tot.
Yeah,
that's the one.
Yeah, went to Celtic.
Yeah. Can't say I know too much about him. So, but that is one of my favourite parts about being a Celtic fan. Is every player that you're linked with is a great player. No matter, like, I'd never seen Camilo Duran play football before he signed for Celtic. And I had my feed of Celtic fans were saying, oh, this is a fantastic signing.
Well,
how do you know?
Well, we actually did see him last year in the Champions League. He scored the same number of Champions League goals last season as Vinicius Junior.
Wow.
He scored at St. James's Park, but it was the last goal in 8-2 defeat on aggregate. But he got patronised by the Newcastle supporters and got applauded for his efforts.
Ah, okay.
Shells, of course, would have played against his Carabao side.
Did Alex Murphy play in that game? Or did he bend with Burn leg, maybe? He definitely played in one of those. Yeah,
he
didn't play against Shelburne, though, unfortunately. We didn't get to see him on
ice. Yeah, he didn't, so. Yeah. Because I looked it up last night, there was no proof of Camilo Duran.
About a half an hour ago.
What was your favourite Camilo Duran goal from last night?
The team goal.
Did you like the team goal?
Yeah, I liked the team goal, yeah.
I liked
the purest, man.
Thunder bastard of a left footer into the top corner. Beautiful.
I know, the team goal was great.
Poor old Negrin left behind here in this ranking system. Yeah. It was still a nice goal.
That's why the ranking system is so flawed.
Oh, it could never be perfect, but yet it's so intoxicating at the same time.
Yeah.
3-0 up anyway, Celtic. Flying it. Life is good for the Celts.
Once they don't capitulate now in the second leg.
Wouldn't be like them away from home.
No.
They'll have the fallback then of the Europa League, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where...
Yes, exactly.
That's where it looks like last will go now. Anyway, shout out for the last disallowed goal.
That was amazing.
He didn't know it was disallowed.
It is funny though, because like Celtic do pride themselves on being like, you know, European football is what they are using as their selling point. But like the reality is for Celtic, they're like, they're in the Europa League, like, sized club at this stage with modern football and the way it's gone. Like, Champions League is a bonus for Celtic, but Europa League is something that they could genuinely, like, properly should be setting their sights on. We should be competing for this competition as opposed to Champions League. I know you want to compete at the highest level, and if you, in theory, try to compete for the Champions League, then... by proxy, if you go into the Europa League, you should be in the best possible stature to go and compete for it. But it's sad to see like clubs like Celtic, Ajax, etc., fall back into that Europa League category. Like, that's just where they are now.
Yeah. Yeah, they still have big nights in them as well. That's the thing. Like, they ran Bayern Munich right to the wire a few years ago. But you do look at those runs that Rangers in particular, I suppose, have had, because they've been in the Europa League a little bit more regularly than Celtic have over the course of the last, whatever, half a decade. We're probably edging on a decade now. The runs that they've had in the Europa League, getting to the latter stages of it, and the big nights, like, I mean, they hammered Borussia Dortmund that time when Bellingham was playing with them. Like, there is a lot to be said for that too, I suppose, getting a little bit deeper into the competitions as opposed to just qualifying for the bigger one. Now, financially, whatever, that makes total sense that you would want to be in the Champions League and the big nights with the big teams coming to town, but... Europa League final for Celtic shouldn't be too far away if they did end up in the in that competition. But I think they'll be in the Champions League this year anyway.
A beautiful obsession, Matthew. Not just to describe your attitude. The name of a new Manchester City 4-part documentary on Amazon Prime, watched the first episode last night, concentrates entirely on the 24-25 season, which you will recall Pep Guardiola has his most difficult time in management.
Yeah.
Towards the end of 2024, when they lose a pile of games in a row. You may have seen this clip already doing the rounds. It was kind of everywhere at the moment. His captain at the time, Kyle Walker, and Pep having a huge disagreement after one of those many defeats. Have a look at this.
The situation, the ruling, and the ball had to feel if I lose the ball, go. But when the ball comes with Kyle has to know that they lose the ball, it's go.
I react to someone.
You don't understand, Kyle.
No, but if you keep saying my name... every meeting and every fucking thing, then it's going to be impossible. You're going to get a reaction.
I said, just go. I said the concept, Kylie.
For fuck's sake. Every fucking meeting, it's my name.
Maybe because you're a captain.
Okay.
I will say the other one. I said to Josko now. I said to Josko the name. It's just to improve.
If you want to get
I've reacted to someone else. Yeah, I've lost the ball. You somehow bring my name into it.
But if you take personally carry the trigger, I'm sorry, it's won by my defeat. After 9 years together, win 1-1, in the good moments and bad moments, is my defeat. Absolutely. More than anything else. If you have a problem, you have to tell me. I want to stay here for the money or for just for the fact to stay. I want it because I said the problem is I want to be with you. I want to win a fight in that position. I want to feel that I'm leaving and run away from you. I don't want it. I don't want the feeling for now. The business for now. That feeling of not having. But if you feel captain first, that one, that's my problem, tell me. There's nothing to change the love I have for a long time. No one said. But I want to fight.
Yeah, it's a pretty extraordinary moment in documentary history alone. He starts welling up there, he has to walk away at the end, Pep Guardiola, that. And it's only a couple of games later that he reveals to the whole squad he's getting divorced. And then that's the time he's scratching on his face. So that it is extraordinary. That's all in episode one of the new documentary. Speaking of extraordinary, Dermot Keenan writes, Vinny must have missed the Lewis from Tala. Good morning, part two. How are you?
Morning. How are you?
Are you well?
I'm good, yeah. No comment.
Plenty of comments coming in from yesterday's show. Plenty. Do you want to get stuck straight into it? Do you want to talk about Celtic last night? No. Anything you want to touch on first?
Celtic, that's just boring. That's done, isn't it?
Mm. I agree.
Move on.
Wholeheartedly.
No, Endo won't be happy. I've had my say.
Endo's had his 10 minutes. Yeah.
Well, for anyone who missed yesterday's show, we had Vinny in from the top. And we, I suppose, innocently enough started talking about the FAI Cup quarterfinals with the narrative that, oh, this is kind of good for football around the country because there'll be only one Dublin side in the semi-finals. And from there, we spent the next 35 minutes or so talking about the state of Irish football. And, well, I think we were all generally in alignment in a passionate way about where the hell this is all going. And a lot of people got involved. You've slept on it. Is there anything that you wish to add or retract?
Yeah, no, when you sleep on it, it's slightly different. So I think people see the world in three different ways now.
Three?
Yeah. Anyway. What? So what I mean by that is we had a social media clip of me using the word bullshit.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think that's so... And I understand the need for social media in the world we live in. I don't think that gives a full context of the whole conversation. So when we talk about the whole we, there's a whole, like, it's easy for me to throw out the line of just build a pitch and make two teams use it. But there has to be a whole structure about what we're doing. And that's why when you said, I think you asked me, who's we?
Mm.
And I think this has to be, we have to change society and has to be government-led. Now, and it has to be structured to building pitches and stuff like that. So that would be the only thing you'd sort of add to that clip to go, but by building a pitch and making two different clubs use it, there has to be a structure of who runs it, who opens the gate, who closes the gate. Then there has to be almost a business around it. So we need, like, I fundamentally don't change my opinion on what was coming out yesterday. I'm just saying... One of the things that get missed when you go on these little rants, or we have this discussion we had, is we have to do it in a structured and organised way. Mm-hmm. So there's two different arguments to what I'm saying is when the government or us as a society build what we've built in City West or Adamstown, or there's so many of these places around the country where we've built, and I happen to live in City West, a great example, we've allowed a builder-led... almost small town stroke nearly a city to be built without any sporting facilities whatsoever in the area. And that's just chaos. And that's just like, so the doctor's daughter never gets to know the plumber's daughter on a football pitch, and the doctor never gets to know the plumber at the side of that football pitch with their kids. Mm-hmm. And all of that stuff leads to potential problems further down the line. And that is my point. And I think what the one thing the government do is miss out on how sport can play such an important part in society. Like, anyone that's played any sort of sport at a decent level will tell you that the circles they mix in are completely different than their brother or sister who have never played sport.
Mm.
And it is so important that we embrace that. And I think that can get lost in the headline of that's bullshit, just make people do stuff. I think the importance of why you have to start at the bottom. And then that goes back to participation levels. And the more we get people playing, whether it's soccer and on better facilities and more contact hours with better structures, with better coaching, then the more likely to have people playing Premier League football again than just doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot in what we're talking about. And you said we could do a full show, and I think we could do a full week in it with the right people coming in
yeah.
and the right questions. Like, the government still have questions to answer. But from the government point of view, they will come in here and say, we're providing funding. But unless you have a 15-year lease, you can't get that funding on land, for example. So if you're playing in a council facility, you're going to struggle to get an AstroTurf put into your facility. But there is then. So what they'll say is, yeah, but we've got other funding. We can get up to 50 grand.
Mm.
Yeah, but if you're in a local park, say Malahide Castle, where do you put that 50 grand worth of equipment? You don't build facilities for people. And then the council workers mightn't work on a bank holiday, or do you have to go home at 6 o'clock on a Saturday? So there's a whole industry we have to create around it. And there's some in power might think I was a bit flippant yesterday by saying bullshit, just build it. So I understand we've got to build a whole underneath it, but we have to start somewhere, Colm. We can't send kids home because it's dark and not let them train anywhere and expect that to be a good outcome.
Yesterday wasn't the first time that we've had that type of discussion.
Yeah.
But did you get a reaction throughout the day yesterday when you left here?
Yeah.
And what was it?
Mixed, like lots of people very positive to it. Somebody in government reached out as well.
Really?
Yeah.
You can't say?
No. I don't think, you know, and was in agreement, but also would like to know what would be the next step.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a senior minister or anything, but like how could we help? So there'll be stuff like that. But we have to start somewhere, and what we're doing at the moment is not right. I think most people would agree with that. Like, I mean, there's so many ways we can go off on a tangent here in a splinter. Like, you think about, let's start at the very top of the game. The government have given the FEI a lot of money for funding for development of players. We see the appointment of full-time academy directors, and that's a really welcome. But what age group does League of Ireland start at? 14.
Yeah.
So that's to look after kids between, think about it, 14 and maybe up until 18. So that's 4 years of their development.
What happens with an extraordinary 13-year-old? Do you know?
Well, they're playing, they're on a League of Ireland radar. Some League of Ireland clubs have got an under 13 and 12 set up, but by and large, it's like the funding or the sort of academy under structured league starts under 14.
Yeah.
I think I'm right now. It could be under 13. But the point is, it's looks after the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 year olds?
It's not about being 13, it's just whatever age the year before.
So there's so many different strands to this argument where we could have a full show on League of Ireland academies. And what they're doing, what they're not doing, all of that stuff, the government funding that's going in, that's really welcome that we've got off them. But, and that's important to fix the senior team. Then so that's just one strand where we could go down. And that's really, really important. But people have to remember that nursery that starts under 8, 9 and 10, the more people we get of them playing football, soccer, we'd say that because of where we are, soccer, then the more likely we're going to find a new Troy Parrott, Evan Ferguson, whoever that name, Keevan Kelleher. And then if we build housing estates, for example, where I live, and you don't create that, then you're not creating the next, whether that's basketball player, rugby player, soccer player, golf player. So they all have, they're all interlinked, and until we find that little balance with it, it's huge. I mean, there's another full show on Brexit. We've talked about Brexit. We know it's a problem, but does somebody in whether it's an FEI, does somebody? So if my son was in that exceptional talent you're talking about, and if I had the money, I'd take UEFA to the European Court of whatever. If he wanted to be an apprentice plumber in England at 16 years of age, he's allowed to. He's allowed to go and become an apprentice plumber in England, 16 years of age. But he's not allowed to go and be an apprentice footballer 16 years of age. Cost me a huge amount of money, but I think I'd win the case. And if we don't think not allowing our players go to England at 16 isn't affecting the top line figure, then we're in dreamland as well.
We probably haven't felt the effect of that yet either, have we?
Well, we're starting to see it already, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, there's some people say Mason Mealy, great example, have gone to Spurs, but I think people have played in England would disagree with the argument that he's learnt more playing League of Ireland than he had been a 15, 16, 17, 18 year old in Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah. Can I just read one? There's new comments coming in now about this, updated ones. One from Massey on YouTube. We touched on this yesterday. Nothing new in Dublin, Ireland here. What facilities were built out in the tower block areas of Dublin in the 1970s? And that's to say, like, I do wonder, was this conversation occurring on national airways in 1984, for example, as it is now? Because it does feel more pronounced now. And I wonder, is it one of your suggested topics for a day? Is it Brexit related that actually just puts a magnifying glass on the limitations of the system in Ireland?
So Brexit is around elite players and the argument around elite players. And like, people will say, well, you ship fellas over 16 to England, never really looked after them. But that doesn't mean, that is an argument, but doesn't mean that isn't affecting. Like, nobody has convinced me that if I had a son at 16 years of age, his best place to develop as a footballer is Tottenham Hotspur's academy, for argument's sake, than any League of Ireland academy. No one can convince me of anything other than that.
It's better or worse going to Spurs?
It's better going to Spurs. And that academy and the contact hours and the access to everything that comes with that is so much better and better for the development of a footballer. Now, that's a problem because we can't do that in Ireland, but that is the facts. And if they don't like it, tough. League of Ireland people don't like that, tough. So no one will ever convince me of that. What we've done with Mason is just one example. We've taught him how to be a footballer against men.
Yeah.
But have we taught him all the other basics, fundamental stuff for the last 2-3 years that a kid at Tottenham that he's up against now to break into the first team have had? And I'm not sure we have done that. All of the contact hours, all of the stuff, the basic stuff is... And then that's why it gets harder. We're competing against everybody in the world to get into Premier League now. And it's harder. We're not doing that. But come away from that Premier League stuff. Yeah. Go back to the Ballymun point for a second. Other than the big grass bowl in the middle of them flats, they didn't build facilities in Ballymun. And the challenge is... One of the comments I got yesterday is suggesting that building AstroTurf pitch is going to solve all the world's problems. You're wrong.
It's not going to make it any worse, though, is it?
No, but if it takes 2, 3, 4 kids out of the vicious cycle that Ballymun was, because they're part of a team and a structure, and one of them kids in Ballymun who gets an opportunity to play with somebody and then gets called into a DDSL team, and all of a sudden his new mates are from Temple Oak, are from Tala, from wherever, and you're mixing in different circles. And like me, I grew up in a really difficult part of Tala and Kilnarn. Drugs ripped through our society, late 80s, early 90s. I wasn't somebody who was ever going to go down that line. But most of my mates that played with Cherry Arch were for a different part of the world. And I seen different things where some of my classmates only seen drugs, societal issues, Rob cars flying around the place, all of that stuff. And I made different life choices.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I would have made them anyway. But sport is about that. And it doesn't mean, there's people who've played football at a decent level and been really troubled anyway.
Yeah.
But it's about creating an environment.
Is the result in what you're trying to create to produce professional footballers?
As well, yes.
But it's not exhaustive in that. That's not the only thing.
It's not. It has to be about participation.
Right.
So it's a bit like when we're in here and I'm listening to the radio, some of the debates here around, say, summer football back in the day.
Yeah.
And I would have got heavily criticised about taking a different view on that. The job of the FEI is to run the game. It's actually technically probably not even to develop footballers. It's to run and administrate the game. Now, they've taken the job of developing the next best player is now become between 14 and 18 is the role of now the League of Ireland clubs. But we've forgotten about the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old. You can drive around Dublin. No, it was late this morning. You can drive around Dublin with no traffic all through August. All through August, because no one's around. And that was the whole debate around summer football. So we are sometimes, the elite level of summer football is grand. It's 100% the way forward. But we've got to get the participation levels, not take them for granted. And one of the arguments that some in the FEI would have made around summer football, when people said, well, our numbers will drop. The grassroots clubs are saying this. Not the league clubs, the grassroots clubs. People like Portmarnock, I remember sitting with a guy who won the workshops, and they just feared that so many people would just drop off. And they, in one sense, they were okay with it. Yeah, if some decide to play, that's life. We cannot have that mindset. We have to have more people, more women, more, or ladies, girls, whatever the right word is, keep them involved for longer and keep men and boys around football and any sport for much longer. And I think while the headline out yesterday's scrap we had was facilities, I think it's a huge part of it. Then there's a whole thing of the administration of those facilities. But we have to start somewhere, Colin.
I have two things for you here. You know the Rediscovery Centre in Ballymun?
Yeah.
There's a green space but right beside that. Do you know any plans for that? Did you ever hear anything about that? That to me would be perfect. I drive by that regularly. Massive area. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah.
But you'd probably find 20 apartments.
That's an example.
On your point about Ballymun, there's a great documentary about the development of the Ballymun housing facilities and the optimism around it, because it was seen as like the futuristic version of what housing could look like in Ireland, where you've got communities based in amongst each other with facilities, with green spaces, with shops, with schools, with churches, with libraries, everything that they need. And what didn't happen was all of that rest of the stuff. They built the houses, they built the flats, and they built nothing else. And then they let it go to wreck and ruin. They didn't maintain it. They didn't do anything to help these communities. They shipped the poorest of the poor out of the city centre, out to these flats in Ballymun, and it became what it became because it was allowed to degenerate. That's sort of what we were talking about yesterday with the housing and with the developments now, is that we have a housing crisis now. They're building a load of houses with nothing else, and we're expecting a completely different outcome than what we had.
I don't expect any from Ballymun, but you can't make the mistakes of Ballymun again. And it feels like they're doing that with the apartment blocks, the building.
Mm.
And my argument about that is, if you're not going to include sport in development of houses and the benefits of that, then you're just creating the next ghetto in 20 years' time. And then I do believe that there's a knock-on effect to that all the way up into the international team. Yes, and people playing Premier League. The more contact hours, the more ability to play football, the more... If you raise a child now in one of those apartments in City West, where are they kicking the ball, Colin?
Yeah.
In a corridor where they're getting given out to by the neighbour? Now, I know there's a trend away from people going to the street to kick balls. I get that. But you drive through a lot of housing estates that have still green space, you still see a football goal, a soccer goal.
Can I just... that's an interesting point you bring up, right? Because I want to bring up the point I said yesterday again about when I go back to Cork and I look up in the green, the same green that we all played and nobody plays there anymore. So that's nothing to do with facilities, right? There's no one actually choose not to play. And back in the day, in the 50s and 60s, when the footballers of the 70s and 80s were produced, you see documentaries on the star players from that era. And what do they all say in common about their childhood?
They're playing on
the curb. They're hitting the ball against the wall. There is no pitch. There is no green space. There is nothing. So that's a mentality and a cultural
thing.
When
you grew up and many cars was on your road, you're older than me, obviously. Many cars was on your road.
Why would you mean I'm older than
how many,
you?
Well, you're older than me, but how many cars...
That's absolutely false.
How many cars was on your road? Forget your age for a second. How many cars when you're growing up?
I don't understand where you're going with
this. So the point is, when I grew up in Kilnarden, when Wimbledon came, we played tennis.
Yeah.
Okay, and on that very same road I grew up on, when the World Cup was on, everyone played five-side soccer. We played five-side, we had a big field in front of us anyway, okay? When the Olympics was on, we had 100 metres from, was one lamppost to lamppost, we had 200 metres, and there was a bend for the 200 metres.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we marked out the track.
Yeah.
Kids don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But there's about five cars on the road. There's now probably 100 cars on the same road. Things are different. Accept that.
But the green space I'm talking about is not different.
Yeah, so they built houses on that green space.
Not in what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but where I'm talking about, they built houses on it. Mm. The same field that he played football with Richard Dunn on. He didn't learn skills playing football with me and a couple of our mates. He learned it out in home farm and then came back and played football.
Yeah.
But if you're not playing football with your mates, you're not playing football with your skills. So it's a bit like, I haven't come up with the solution here. Unless we come up with a detailed plan led by it's not the FAI to have, they have to administrate the elite level of our game and they have to administrate the rules and regulations. Unless the Department of Sport come up with something and say, go into areas. So for example, your skills, and the landing skills and build facilities and skills and not just the elite level skills where the parents can do a fundraiser and all of a sudden the skill is raised $250,000 and then they go to the government and it's easy for them to get funding because they own the land. But unless they come up with facilities that are run for the people, so that means bank holidays, when all the families are off, the council staff don't go, well, we're all off as well, then that's life. Somebody has to work the bank holidays as well. So unless they build these facilities and are multi-use, multi-purpose facilities that can pay for themselves, that are part of an industry, and some of it will have to be in certain areas, stay funded, staff put into them to manage it and control it, then if you're not playing football in a structured way, then you're not going home to play it on the streets.
Mm.
And we're losing that connection big time. You're also losing. So one of the things we try to do as a government is you put social houses, a certain amount of social houses has to be ring-fenced to new builds. That's fine. But not, people are barely saying hello to each other on roads anymore because everyone's busy in life. So if you want to get to know the other parents, stand for an hour on the side of a pitch, whether it's a gaff pitch, a hurling pitch, a soccer pitch, and get chatting.
Mm.
And you know, all of a sudden, you know, Mick's a plumber. So all of a sudden, you have a leak in your house.
Yeah.
Mick, I need a favour. Mick helps you out. And all of a sudden, you're building a community. Not people who don't even talk to each other anymore.
Yeah.
And so we've, even in that 20 minutes, we've touched on loads of things and never delved into the detail of Brexit. So if I was a multimillionaire and my son was 14, 15, and I was going, this kid's going to be top notch, I'd take on the Brexit argument in England. And I reckon I'd win it. But I need endless amount of money to win it. But no one can tell me that if you want to become a plumber at 16 in England...
You can go away.
Yeah, okay.
You can go away, but you can't do it as football.
Final point on the schools. Because I do think that's an important one. And I appreciate a lot of what we're talking about here is Dublin-centric, but this applies to rural schools as well and rural outlooks. Schools are getting bigger and more packed every single year, and I know this by speaking to a lot of teachers and also just seeing it, and they have no space. And what you're seeing now is a lot of schools in rural areas and in Dublin areas as well, particularly out in the suburbs where they're building all these developments with nothing else, is prefabs. That's where the kids are going to school. Where do you put the prefabs? On the pitches. Because they have no other space on their land. So I know myself, there's a local school up in Donegal that's nearby me where the secondary school has double-decker prefabs, and there's about 9 of them on the football pitch. And the football pitch is gone now. So what do the kids do at lunch? Hang about, do nothing.
Yeah.
Chat to each other in the corridor. You know, they've nowhere to actually play football. So it's like there's loads of societal issues here that run deeper than just, you know, build the facilities for the clubs, that'll solve it. It won't. You know, there's also the issue of transport and everything else. Like there's multitude of layers here that need to be picked apart for this.
We were talking about the multi-sport thing yesterday and how you go about doing that. And I think that's actually the part of the clip that we had out yesterday that was kind of that part of the conversation. Are the schools a way you could actually go about doing that in that, you know, when you go to school, I know you're talking about the background and it doesn't really matter if it's GAA, if it's football, they'll all do it if the reward at the end of it is right. Like everyone will chip in and be happy enough with what they get. The funding that goes towards all these individual little clubs, if that's all pooled in together as opposed to dispersing it around in small chunks and getting small things out of it. If you throw all that in together and bring the schools in, and then suddenly you've got two different departments in government, whether it be sport and education, and you're also then improving the top end stuff, the elite level stuff at that young age of 8, 9, 10, 11, but you're also then getting the kids who have to go to school and are at school and are there anyway, but also have this at their doorstep.
Yeah, and I think it's about the contact hours from 5, 6, 7. And if a school has a facility, they'll only but love taking the kids down for 20 minutes here and there, part of their day. And I think we have to... The big challenge is, I can hear a caretaker's ears ringing, well, I have to leave at 5. And that's why it takes a whole project of who runs this facility until 10 o'clock at night when the school... Yeah. It's gone and the caretaker goes and there's matches. So it's a huge thing, Colin.
See, that's exactly it. You're right.
But we don't start somewhere.
But look at the YouTube comments. No, this is all constructive. Everyone is plucking issues from all sorts of society, whether it's infrastructure and sport or it's cultural differences in the past.
It takes a huge rejig.
And all of them are legitimate comments. Yeah. All of them.
Yeah.
Right. So there's one, for example, right, by KPLK, Cretfinny. Most people you meet out walking now don't say hello back. People are becoming very insular and rude to each other. Now that's an opinion about the world.
Yeah.
You know, you could argue it's generalisation. Plenty of people say hello back, but I understand the point about what's not said there is devices controlling the people and people's heads down and all that. Right. And that is different from people growing up back in the day. I don't know if that explains why people don't use the green, to go back to that example. I don't know. But then people go back to the very practical thing of facilities, right? And the lack of will in the country to actually provide them. And then the other thing is, you can't make people do something that they don't want to do. So if you built a facility, do you think it is, if you build it, they will come? As in, more kids will start playing because there is a brand spanking new facility.
I've said it
here
before, my son has no interest in football or any sport. So it's not about that. You have to create environments. And sport is one of the best ways to change and help and improve our society. And, I mean, it's just fact. It's 100% fact that you want to get people together. Sport is easy. We'd still have social issues in my area. I grew up in Ballymun's in certain areas. We still have issues. But if it's a joined up approach and the local guards are involved and different things, we've seen this in an area in Dublin, I'm not going to say where it is, where there was a late night league run on a Friday and Saturday night. Local guards were involved in it. The FAI ran it. And the crime figures were reduced by a third in that area because all the kids were playing late night football on a Friday and Saturday for a month. And the crime figures went down hugely.
Is that right?
Huge. And I don't want to give the area, in case you give the wrong area, exact areas and stuff like that. But I can back that up with any politician that's listening to us and wants to hear it. The stats are there. But there isn't enough funding. There's not enough people doing that. And there's not enough. And then even that, even if I play for Crumlin United or I play for Belvedere.
Yeah.
And I'm doing that as well with my mates on a Friday, Saturday night. I'm improving as well.
Yeah. Declan Kelly brings up the issue of membership fees. Does the, say, compound, sporting compound you suggested yesterday, that it would be an all-sport facility, in your mind, does that require membership?
It does. And there is certain socially deprived areas, there's no doubt, will need a hand. But one thing, people, this is not, people won't like to hear this, but a lot of parents think, just send their kids to football and don't put, like, there's a cost involved in it and you have to have a membership fee towards something. You have to do it. People will send their kids Irish dance and play 60 quid a month and they've got, football in this country and Gaelic to a point is a little bit too cheap for people if you've kids. A little bit, like, you've got to, there's got to be a fee involved in and a membership fee to a point.
What about disadvantaged areas?
Well, disadvantaged areas, you've got to help people out. But, I mean, there's an element of, when you pay for something, then there's a responsibility. If a parent has to pay, whether it's a fiver a week, the kid has to turn up. There has to be some cost with this, but the benefits have to be there. Yeah. And it can't be just in a park and training. So the biggest piece that's missing in all of this is then the administration of the game. At local level, we need sort of more boots on the ground to explain to clubs, for example, that there's a 50 grand fund. So education is huge around this. So there's certain clubs at a massive advantage, whether it's, I'm plucking names out here, and it is, for apologies, very Dublin-centric because that's where I'm from. It's easier to talk about. But some clubs like Knocklyon United might be in a really strong position. A lot of their members and people are very business, running on business, very well-educated people. And they know how to fill out the form. They know how to get that 50 grand, spend it. Or what, they can buy a tractor, have it in one club, move it around. They can best the facilities. And there are other people running clubs doing Trojan work but can't access and aren't accessing that 50 grand that, to be fair to the government, is there for them and will get if they can fill in the right forms and different bits and pieces. So, again, it's another strand where you could have someone in for 40 minutes here talking to you about what's available, but it's hard.
As a matter of interest, why do you think that GAA, generally speaking, is better run?
There's more money in the game, for starters. So they can get only a month ago and get 81,000 people to come in and watch a soccer game, and they can make a couple of million out of that and put it in their back pocket. To be fair to GAA, the money does filter down quite well. Mm. I think it's more, feels more like they get the community part of it much better, and there's less splinter clubs in GAA than there is. You could have part of Cork and Dublin where there's 5 and 6 and 7 clubs where there might be only 2 GAA clubs and sometimes only 1. There'll be a senior, intermediate and junior team within that club, so therefore they can focus on much more things. So they're better at connecting with the community. They have better, and the more people in it is more likely to be an accountant as part of your club. Therefore, filling in these forms and the structure is much better.
We're going to have to move on to the next slot, right? Graham Hunter is very exciting. You want to stick around for that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I love Graham.
Who does?
You know that.
I know you do. I know you have a great rapport. Can I just get you on two things that are happening at the moment in the League of Ireland before we move on from this? Richard Dunn.
Yeah, this is big.
Kept the door open for taking a Derry City job. You're two big contacts, you know. Evan Ferguson and Richard Dunn.
So, Dunny is in Ireland today, or yesterday, wasn't he?
Yeah, we're home farm, yeah.
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 And me and Dunny speak 3 and 4 or 5 times a week. So I didn't know he was in Ireland yesterday. So live on air, I'm texting him going,
you're taking the delivery job.
Like, what are you doing? So I got no invite for golf. I got nothing. Yeah, I didn't know he was involved with anything got to do with Home Farm.
Yeah.
And the last time he didn't even text me for my birthday. So, yeah.
He's busy. He could be very busy.
So I have no information other than he's a twaff for not... for coming to Ireland, not offering me play a game of golf, and I don't know what he's up to. And I don't know whether he went. He must have went home last night. Otherwise, he'd have texted me.
Oh, that is brilliant.
I think legally we have to say that Richard Dunn would deny being that
twat.
Way.
I'm not calling a twat. Like, what's he doing? So, but on a serious note, when it comes to League of Ireland, he's a huge interest in it. We speak weekly about it. We'd be texting him. So on a Friday night, what game you at? He'd watch a League of Ireland game every single week. He's huge interest and he's huge passion to get involved in coaching. Derry haven't filled the job, but if it was available, I know he'd definitely go and meet them if that was something. Sounds like I'm his agent here, but he has a real passion for it. He really invested in it, has a huge interest in it. His son, who has played for Ireland, by the way, is it with Barnsley at the moment, has been training with the first team.
Oh, yeah.
Teo hopefully is on his way to becoming a really good player. But Richard is really passionate about coaching and managing somebody. And I think if Derry were interested, I think he'd definitely speak to them. I don't know whether he's done it. As I said, he's just blanked me in the last 24 hours.
He's a busy man.
And I'm not happy about
it. Busy man. 8 o'clock tonight, Conference League playoff, First Leg Shamrock Rovers against Coupes of Finland. We'll talk about that on tomorrow's
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.